What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the show. Today, I wanted to kind of just come on, do a little solo podcast episode. I realized looking back on my last like handful of episodes, I've just had only guests and I haven't even been able to record a solo podcast episode here in the last few weeks. So kind of feels good to just hop on solo, shoot the shit with you guys and just try and squeeze in as much as I can before I have calls starting here in the next 25 minutes or so. But I was thinking about topics and things that I wanted to talk about today. And naturally, my default is just doing a Q&A style episode because there's so many good questions and things that I see on my Instagram every week that it's always fun to just kind of do an extended version of that on the podcast episode. But I wanted to make this a little bit more unique and make it more of a fitness kind of training, just like exercise-based type of podcast episode instead of doing kind of predominantly nutrition stuff or just sprinkling in some of the fitness stuff. So I just wanted to kind of shift gears. We're going to talk mostly about training stuff and kind of keep to that world today. And we'll kind of resume the normal nutrition topics and all that good stuff as we, you know, keep moving on here the rest of this year. The first question that I'm going to start here, I'm going to try and get through as many questions. I say that every time, but I'm trying to get through as many questions as I can. I think I have 8 or 9 saved here. I'm just going to keep going until I got to hop off. But the first question I have is, if you had to choose one exercise for each of the major muscle groups, which ones are you choosing? Now, I remember when I read this question for the first time, and even just reading it today, I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, damn, man, like one exercise for each muscle group sounds fairly easy, and I'm going to try and simplify it here today, but it's still very difficult because even within quote unquote major muscle groups, there's still different, you know, regions of the muscle, or there's different divisions of the same muscle group, right? If we look at the pec in general, we look at your clavicular pec, which is kind of like the top part of your pec, and look at your sternal pec, which is kind of the middle, and then we look at your costal, which is the bottom. Like we can have 4 or 5 different exercises kind of targeting different movement or different parts of our pec muscle alone. So coming up with one single movement for all the different muscle groups is extremely difficult, but I kind of want to break down each major muscle group, at least what I interpret as a major muscle group, and kind of walk through some of the train of thought that I have when I'm programming, you know, programs for clients, and I'm coming up with new workout programs, and we're just experimenting with new movements, exercises, different movement patterns. There's so many things that we can kind of rotate through. But for me personally, starting with the lower half of our body, think about the glutes first, right? Not men, but most women's favorite muscle group to kind of to train, glutes being a big one. And again, we look at the glute max, the glute med, the glute min. Like, yes, there's different types of exercises that we could do to target each part of the glute or train the glute in more of a short position or maybe more of a lengthened position work. But when we look at the glutes, I'm thinking of like unilateral work. So something like Bulgarian split squats or front foot elevated lunges are huge ones. They've been staples in my programs personally and a lot of my clients' programs as well. Whether it be with dumbbells or barbells or in the Smith machine, there's so many ways that we can kind of interchange some of these like unilateral kind of like lunge patterns almost. But Bulgarian split squat is undefeated in my opinion. But then also like a glute bridge could also be part of this conversation too, where we're doing a little bit more short position work up top. It's impossible to pick one, but I'm gonna kind of throw out just like any type of lunge pattern with, or like a lunge pressing pattern with like a glute bridge variation, I think could be magical when it comes to training glutes. If we look towards the front of the legs, that's when we're talking about our quads here. Most of the time people are going to think like, yeah, leg extension, single joint movement, pretty stable, kind of just grip it and rip it. I think the leg extension machine can and should be part of most people programs if you have access to it, but not everybody does. And quite frankly, I don't know, and I don't think that's the best quad movement that someone can sit here and do. When I think of quads and I think of trying to train, you know, most muscles in the lengthened position, which we just see some benefit when we train muscles in all, you know, planes of their range of motion. But training in the lengthened position, maybe having a slight benefit with certain muscle groups at least. But with the quads, you can't do that with a leg extension machine, and it's kind of hard to do that. But anything with like a hack squat or a sissy squat variation, something where we're getting a ton of knee bend, our knees driving over our toe, our quads really lengthening at the bottom, and that bottom part of that movement being the most difficult part of that lift, man, we're getting so much benefit. So for me personally, any kind of like hack squat variation, I've been experimenting with Smith squats recently. So getting in the Smith machine, elevating my heels, and kind of going as low as I can. And that eventually just kind of turned into a hack squat. It's just because my torso stays a little bit more upright there. But I think any hack squat variation is great. Leg extension can be good too. But moving on to hamstrings, this is something I don't think is controversial, but if we look at an RDL, it is predominantly hamstring. Like there are glutes working, right? Like when we're hinging and we're dropping down and we're sitting in back into our hips, we are absolutely using your glutes there as well. But it is definitely more of a hamstring type of movement. You can even make it more hamstrings by doing something like a stiff-legged RDL, but just good old-fashioned regular RDLs, kind of in a program with things like Bulgarians or glute bridges. Doing hack squat, leg extension, kind of sissy squats. There's so many ways that we can just target all these muscle groups, but RDLs have been a staple. And quite frankly, like you can do RDLs every program for the rest of the year, the next 2 years. Maybe you're alternating between dumbbells and barbell and stiff legged, or maybe sometimes you sprinkle in some good mornings. Like there's a lot of ways to kind of change your hinge pattern. But if I had to pick one movement for my hamstrings, and for most people, it's going to be RDLs, especially barbell RDLs, just because we can load it a little bit heavier. Rounding out our legs, and again, there's so many individual kind of muscle groups within the legs for sure, but thinking about the last ones, the calves, any standing leg calf variation I think is awesome. Ideally, like spending a little bit more time pausing for a second or two in the stretched position at the bottom. If you can get into a stretched position, like you can kind of elevate your toes on like a plate or on a step, or ideally you might have a standing calf raise machine in your gym. When you are in that stretch position and your calves are fully stretched, spending a little bit of time and then coming up, pausing for a second at the top, we can kind of change the tempo cues here to kind of spending a little bit of time in each part of the lift. And man, you do that for a period of time, all the people out there complaining that their calves can't grow, like you'll see them grow a little bit for sure. But adding some form of calves, if those are important to you, are important. But I prefer personally the standing version over the seated variations. Moving up to kind of above the torso here, kind of our upper body, starting with the back. And again, the back is very difficult because shit, there's so many, again, just different types of muscles that encompass our back that it's hard to pick one movement for our back. So I'm going to talk about maybe like an overhead kind of pull and then kind of like a seated chest supported pulling motion here. But starting with like the regular lat pull down, or if you want to do pull-ups or assisted pull-ups, there's a lot of ways that if you can picture me, put your heads or your hands over your head and just pulling from top to bottom. I love the lat pull down machine because it's really stable. You can lock yourself in. You can progress over time. There's a lot of ways you can kind of manipulate your grip as well, but doing a lat pull down is so helpful. Sure, you work your lats a little bit too, but you know, if you look at all of the other kind of upper back muscles, your rhomboids, your traps, your teres major, you're using your biceps a lot of times doing kind of an overhead lat pull down. So there's a lot of reasons I think that doing the lat pull down could be really helpful. But if we broke it down, okay, that's our kind of like top to bottom. And then maybe we're sitting doing some chest supported row variation or a T-bar row where we're standing and something is holding onto our chest and we're able to kind of just let that weight pull our arms directly out in front of us, pulling at that angle, especially with the neutral grip, if we're working lats, could be really helpful. And that would be something I personally would recommend to everybody if you have access to it. at your gym, or if you have a home gym and you have a bench and you can, you know, do like a chest supported row where you're leaning on the bench itself and doing row variations from there. Man, it's just super stable. You can lift really heavy. So many benefits to doing those. And if I had to break back movements down into a couple movements, those would definitely be it. Biceps, something probably like an incline curl, maybe like a no cheat curl could be kind of fun. Triceps, thinking of like cross cable extensions, something where your elbow is kind of off of your torso somewhere in a 45 degree angle and you're kind of extending your elbow. So cross cable tricep extensions, doing double arm or single arm, both can be phenomenal. Also having your elbow above your head and kind of pressing up could be very, very awesome as well. But personally, I like doing the cross cable tricep extension. And when you find a cable machine and you can kind of manipulate the cable height, everything just definitely feels a little bit better. Shoulders, again, when we talk about different divisions of the shoulders, man, there's like 7 to 9 different divisions of your delts. You have your rear delts, you have your side delts or your lateral delts, and then your front delts. I kind of like encompassing them into 3 different variations, but any type of like front raise, I think, is great for the front delts. Even doing like a chest press or a dumbbell press, like you hit your front delts and your lateral delts a little bit with those as well. But if we look at the shoulder all around, like if I had to pick one, it's probably some form of lateral raise variations on the cable machine, like different hand height or waist height, or on the ground, or doing 2 hands at once. But using the cable machine to kind of manipulate the resistance profile, man, it's just, if I had to pick one shoulder movement, it'd be that. But that takes care of our lateral delts. If we think about our front delts, again, some pressing or some front raise variation, and then rear delts, any type of like rowing motion, going back to even the chest supported row stuff, like a little bit more elbows flared. Whew, I think that could be phenomenal. And just kind of rounding out your shoulder training, including kind of those 3 movements in and around your training, each program, you're going to grow some beautiful delts over time if you do that consistently. Last but not least, we have what, our chest. Chest being, man, I personally love like a converging chest press machine where you're seated. You can kind of just kind of grip it and rip it. You have, if you can imagine, like if you can have a neutral grip, you can have flared grip as well here. But I love a neutral grip just because you can get a little deeper stretch, bringing those, you know, those arms back and pressing in a motion where your hands are almost coming together. Any type of converging chest press machine, I think, is phenomenal. Just regular good old dumbbell press, I think, could be great. But cable variations, man, there's so many ones we could do, whether it's a chest fly or like a costal pec press. But yeah, I'm going through all the options in my head here. And I realize this question is like, what's one movement that you would pick? If I had to pick personally, it'd probably be that converging chest press machine. But there's definitely a lot of others out there. And then for my abs, man, abs, any type of like lengthened crunch variation, I think could be super helpful. Cable crunchers is great. Getting an ab mat and cable crunches probably could be a good one for most people. I've experimented. If you haven't seen my lengthened cable crunch, it's not mine. I kind of stole it and made modifications to it after my N1 practical a year and a half ago or so. But that's definitely been something that's been really fun to experiment for me. But if I had to look at my whole body, I think I covered everything. So if I didn't, let me know. But for all the people listening, like having a combination of any and all of those movements together throughout different programs, I think, again, you're covering your bases for most. And as long as you're training close to failure and you're showing up, you're doing that consistently, having all of those different movement patterns, targeting those different muscle groups, man, you're going to see some cool progress over time. Last but not least, as a disclaimer here, those by no means are the best quote unquote movements that you could do for each individual muscle group. Just full stop. Like those are my preferences, things that I've found enjoyment in, things that I've found clients have found enjoyment in, and things that I feel really good at coaching people through. But there are so many, again, other different movements and exercises out there that you can kind of rotate through that you don't have to be married to one single exercise. And again, that's the beautiful part about training and programming, is that we get to we get to kind of mix and match stuff. And we don't have to stick with the same thing all the time, which I'd argue probably could be, could have a negative impact on your training and your results if you just did the same movement over and over again. So adding some variety is definitely important here. Cool. Next question. My adductors and my hammies never seem to recover by my next leg day. I'm doing 4 to 5 exercise on that first leg day. Not sure what to do. Maybe less on that leg day and space it out more. Absolutely. I picked this question because it's kind of unique, but when we look at soreness, lingering soreness, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I don't want people to be afraid of soreness. And quite frankly, I think that's probably a good indication that you're training pretty hard consistently. Like if somebody's sitting here and they're never sore over time, like this, that's, if you showed me their program, if I talked to you for a little while, like maybe there's some suspicion for me that maybe you aren't training as hard as you could be, or there could be room for improvement in certain areas. So when I have somebody that's saying, oh, hell yeah, I'm sore a lot and I can't seem to recover between sessions, like to me, that's almost something that we can work around a little bit more, knowing that you kind of have the knobs, you know, turned up a little bit with your training and you're actually training fairly difficult. For a lot of people, it could be a nutrition thing, could be a sleep thing, could be a hydration thing potentially. So making sure we have some of these other types of knobs turned up, so to speak, could be super helpful as well. But yeah, in general, it's not that uncommon to feel like your hamstrings and your adductors, kind of like your inner thighs, be a little bit more sore. When we look at like muscle fiber types, the muscles in our legs tend to be more on the fast twitch muscle fiber side of things. And long story short, those types of muscle fibers could potentially carry over soreness more than our slow twitch muscle fiber types. So sometimes when you're training those muscles really, really hard, you might find that, yeah, like there's certain muscle groups that feel a little bit more sore, hammies, adductors being a big one. So again, it's not unique to you. I don't want you to feel like you're the only one struggling with this. I can speak on personal experience that that is something that also happens to me as well. So you're definitely not alone. But when it comes to distribution of training and what you're doing and volume throughout the course of the week, maybe there's an argument to be made that doing more like total body work day to day, if you're training 4 or 3 days a week or whatever your training split is, 3-4 days a week, doing like a total body movement where you're spacing out some of these movements instead of jam packing one day of training, a leg day with 4, 5, 6 different movements, you're going to be fucked up and sore after that for sure. So splitting that up and doing 1 or 2 of those types of, you know, lower body patterns, pairing them with other upper body movements, you might find that lingering soreness actually decreases a little bit because the amount of work you're, you know, asking your legs to do on some of those heavy leg days isn't as taxing and isn't as difficult to recover from on your body. So I would make an argument that maybe doing that could be helpful. If you like the lower upper kind of split, I don't blame you. I think there's utility for that for sure. But it is not uncommon either to do your leg day earlier in the week and then have a couple upper body training sessions during the week, maybe another rest day, and then have your last leg day at the end of the week if you're training 4 days a week. So doing like a lower on a Monday, then an upper on a Tuesday or Wednesday, and then another upper on either a Wednesday or Thursday, and then going back to training on a Friday, for example, and then having a 2-day, you know, rest or doing runs or whatever you do on the weekend. Like that absolutely can be helpful and could be something to experiment with to see if that soreness dissipates a little bit more. And just seeing if you notice any difference with that. So there's no problem trying that and having leg days be a little bit more infrequent throughout the course of the week. If that's what works for you and you find that you could be more adherent and be fresher going into those training sessions, I think that could be a lovely idea as well. You know, if this soreness continues like to get worse over the progression of your program, like maybe it's an indication that you need to deload or there's other things, again, from a diet and nutrition and load management standpoint that might be helpful. You know, not to mention sometimes people are out here doing runs or walking or, you know, playing sports or recreational sports or running around with their kids. Like sometimes it's not always just the leg day, it's that in addition to other things. So timing that around what you're doing throughout the course of your week could also be helpful, and being more strategic with where you plan cardio sessions and whatnot. So there's so many different options here, but at the end of the day, you just got to do a little bit of trial and error, see how it goes, and see if that's something that really makes a difference in your enjoyment and your ability to have good quality training sessions every time you go in for lower body days. Speaking of running, next question here is, wanting to get into running, is it better to start with easy runs or do some high intensity runs as well? I have to add the disclaimer here that I am not a running coach. My dad was a running coach. I ran track in high school and he was a great coach, and I've learned a lot from him, even though I didn't really get to pick his brain on a lot of things, just with a lot of stuff that I've seen and how he approached stuff. So I've had some experience running, and I've also worked with other coaches, and my coach right now too, we're doing some running and some cardio sessions and things that I've been really excited about. So that's why I feel like I can speak to this question a little bit, but just know that I'm not a running coach, and you might get a different or better or more detailed answer from another coach out there who might specialize more in cardiovascular training or endurance training, just the mechanics of running and increasing mileage. And again, depending on your goals, like are you trying to run a 10K or a half marathon or a marathon? Or are you just like trying to get some cardio sessions in once a week? Like some of those nuances will kind of dictate the direction we go in with answering some of these questions. But long story short, from my own experience and me working with clients who have now started implementing cardio to their, you know, week of training and different run sessions and different types of, you know, threshold training and zone two training and all these different types of like running sessions that we could do, I found that starting a little bit slower is better. And I would recommend that for most people, especially if you are just doing this alone. If you're working with a coach and you have someone looking at you or walking through your workouts or walking through your form, and you can look at that together on film, like that is very different than you trying to figure this out on your own. So in those scenarios, I definitely recommend you start a little bit slower than just guns a-blazing, going and increasing your mileage by 5 to 10 miles a week straight out of the gate. So for those reasons, I think starting a little bit slower can just help you dial form in, help you build your cardiovascular endurance up a little bit. Just get familiar with what it feels like to start running, because far too often I find that people are very bad at figuring out what their like RPE is or their rate of perceived kind of exertion when it comes to running. Most people go out and run too hard. And when they run too hard, their form breaks down, injuries can start to accumulate or happen. You can get shin splints. You know, you can be running inefficiently, which might have negative implications on your actual gains and maybe what you're getting from those workouts themselves. So for those reasons, slow, steady, doing things a little bit more methodical in the beginning is probably a good idea for most people. Okay, I'd like to kind of use the deadlift example for this, where, you know, you have somebody who's new to the gym. They're not going to come into the gym. Ideally, in no right mind should a coach or trainer have a brand new person come into the gym like, okay, let's do a one rep max for your regular deadlifts or your RDLs. Like, no good trainer or coach is going to do that with the client. That client that coach is going to run that client through different techniques, talk about the form, start light, work your way up. Once you start to develop some good technique and form and posture, that's when we start adding weight. And we want perfect reps in the beginning with lighter weights as we progress to doing heavier stuff, more technical stuff, because form is going to break down if we don't have it down as you start to get heavier and lift heavier in some of these movement patterns over time. So that is a big asterisk, and I relate that to running a lot, because you're not going to come in here and just try and run all out and do a 5K from day one. Like, technically you could, and yeah, maybe there's a little less technicality when, you know, a 5K versus you doing a one rep max of a RDL or something. But again, the premises is similar, or the principle is similar, in the sense that, like, we got to start a little bit slow, get a little more confident, start to figure out what it means to be a good runner. Your body will make neurological adaptations to the types of runs and all the training that you're starting to incorporate more of. And then over time, you will notice that your cardiovascular fitness goes up, your technique, your efficiency, all of these things continue to improve. And you can continue to see these, you know, strides, for lack of a better term, pun intended here, strides in your progressions in this different type of exercise modality compared to lifting and some of the other things that you might be doing daily or weekly. And I do think there's a time and place for more high intensity stuff too, some more zone 5 work and zone 4 work. And, you know, maybe that comes in the form of you doing a bike or you doing less technical stuff, you getting on the rower, you getting on a Stairmaster, like things where you can really just kind of grip it and rip it and just bust your ass, right? Like that is a little bit different, lower intensity than lower intensity work or doing running work where, again, just a little bit more impact, a little bit more physically demanding. You going and running around your local park for 25 minutes, it's just going to be a little bit more difficult than you getting on an elliptical and getting your heart rate up, you know, as quick as you can. So the technicality side of things, especially when it comes to running, which is what this question was kind of referring to, that is where I'm sitting here saying, like, that is important to take into consideration if you are a newbie going into running, even though everyone feels like they can just go run and pick it up really quickly. When you start to think about it and you look at your anatomy and your form and your history and your current, you know, level of fitness, starting a little bit slower and ramping up miles and volume and speed and all that is probably going to be a good idea going forward. Wow, that is hilarious. I'm looking at the time. I got a call here. I'm 2 minutes late too already. I don't even think I got through what, 4 questions? Yeah, 4 questions, 3 questions. I got through 3 questions, but you know what? It is what it is. I'm going to end this episode. I'll probably do a part 2 of this fitness maybe later in the week. I have another guest coming on. So I'll try and get the last few questions out, 4 or 5 questions out at another date, but I got to go and I'll just bookmark part 2 for later. But thank you for listening and thank you for everybody who asked questions. As always, I appreciate you. Until next time, remember to eat with a purpose, train with attention, think with confidence as you work towards your own nutrition and fitness goals. I will see you on the next episode and we'll talk soon. Peace. Thank you again for listening to this episode. If you found value and enjoyed it, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media. If you do, make sure you tag me so I can say thanks. Or if you're on iTunes, scrolling down and leaving a 5-star review would be much appreciated. And if you ever want to get in touch with me, you can always find me on Instagram at LukeSmithRD. Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you have an amazing rest of your day. I'll see you on the next episode.